recognize is the fact that parents, when their children are grown, generally find their lives are less important. They have done their job, that birds have flown and are building homes of their own, or they're out in the world making their way, and the parents become more or less free. And I suppose we may say that freedom in this kind is a principal cause of hysteria. Hysteria is something that generally comes along where, as the old saying was, the devil finds something for idle hands to do. And the person who has no dramatic drive, who may have been fairly busy, but maybe a little sorry for themselves most of the way, parents raising children find it a mixed blessing, but they also come in time to recognize the responsibility and carry on. Perfectly certain that when the job is over, they're going to rest. When they come to rest, they find they cannot. They have had too much activity, and furthermore, the average person who is resting begins to recognize resources within themselves which they have neglected. A young liberated parent in their 40s or early 50s may find that it's very advisable to go back into business or go back into their profession. If they do not go into something that is constructive and purposeful, then they begin gradually to develop a certain sense of frustration. They are sorry for themselves, but they do not know it. They are not functioning constructively or purposefully. And as a result, this tendency to hysteria develops. And it can become very, very serious if something isn't done to correct it. Another cause for genuine hysteria is pain. There are a great many people who in the course of life pass through long periods of pain. There are those who have, for example, been wounded or injured in war or in the general accidents of industrial society. There are others who have developed ailments which are not entirely curable but can be often controlled, but there will be pain. Pain is a constant nag. Some ailments are much more painful than others, and many of the most painful of all are associated with advancing years. Pain of this type can result in a kind of hysteria. It can become a nerve problem, so acute that it affects every aspect of the temperament and character. Yet persons with this kind of pain would like to be and often think they are brave enough to handle the situation. They do not want to admit it. They do not want to wish it on their friends. They do not wish to be hampered and to become objects of pity. Yet this pain goes on. And if it is secreted, held within, and lived with over a period of years, it can result in some type of hysteria. Now, hysterias are not always in the form of ailments. Hysterias can be in the form of addictions or in the form of dedications to unusual or peculiar services in life. One of the outlets for hysteria has always been religion, because in religion the individual comes under the pressure of a tremendous power of suggestion. And many persons or genuine cases of hysteria are benefited by religious allegiances. They also very frequently carry with them activities. The religious dedication may lead to the ministry. It may lead to various social problems. It may cause the individual to take part in world plans for the benefit of the sick, the poor, or the troubled. And in religion, there is a field of service. And in this field of service, the tendency to hysteria is markedly reduced. It is the outlet that prevents the individual from simply living constantly mindful of his own aches and pains. Therefore, if a person has any kind of a physical disability that is uncomfortable or humiliating or a rhythmic source of self-condemnation or self-pity, such an individual should most certainly find an outlet, should not pause at all until they are able to extrovert their inner tensions. Now, this extroversion is something that the various people try to approach in different ways. Generally speaking, a release from hysteria must be involved in some kind of a direct physical activity. We must channel this energy. We must take this magnetic substance which is coursing through us and give it a proper outlet. Therefore, hysteria is seldom corrected merely by a voluntary mental statement. It is seldom corrected simply by listening to others or becoming converted to something. The true solution lies in the development of an energy activity which reopens and restores the flow of the magnetic forces in the human body. Therefore, the individual who wishes to give their lives to a religious purpose will find it very wise to find some religious outlet in which they are busy, in which they are physically involved, that their time is in use, that they are definitely doing something useful, something they're proud of themselves. Otherwise, the therapy will not be what they have hoped it would be. Another cure for hysteria, if you can find the way to work it, is in the case of improving personal knowledge. The man who graduated from medical school with his degree of doctor of medicine in the same class with his own son is an example of this. A person who had reached an age of liberty and freedom, yet was not fulfilled. Where the life is not fulfilled, self-pity is more likely, and a great deal of hysteria is founded in self-pity. So if other factors are not conducive to security or release, the individual can advance an educational program, taking on subjects that he was unable to complete during his earlier years. He can go every day, he can earn a degree, or he can go without credit simply by going. He can take up languages, he can take up art or music, whatever his own personal life seems to need. But he must have something. He cannot solve it simply by sitting down in front of a machine and listening to someone else play music. He must become involved. He must become one of those doing it, even if it's done very amateurishly. There are cases of musicians whose music is never beautiful except to themselves. But it is that which is the important part. It is the satisfaction of self-expression. This is very, very important. Now, other types of hysteria sometimes result from a repetition of unhappy incidents. A person who has a series of bereavements, and this seems as though an ill fortune or an adverse fate was dogging their footsteps. A person who, having found happiness and security, had it suddenly taken away from them. The sudden loss of that which is important is very often involved in hysteria, especially if this loss is one of companionship. Those who have gone through this experience can and very often do feel a certain sense of heartbrokenness. They are never going to be able to recover from the loss. They are going to always remember the tragedy, and in the course of life, most people manage to accumulate two or three tragedies, so that this pattern, once it's established, can cause the person to escape or deny participation in life. Where this happens, there is always a great danger of hysteria. Another problem that we are now beginning to realize and have not noted sufficiently in the past is that the treating of hysteria can often contribute to it. The individual who is under these various pressures may, in some instances, seek help and be medicated. Now, a medication for hysteria or for hysterical outbreaks is a very uncertain way of handling the situation. It is known, of course, that there are a great many neopsychotics who are on medication constantly and as a result are able to return to society with reasonable success. These cases we are not going to dwell upon too much, but I'd like to point out that where medication can accomplish these procedures, there is always the possibility that the protection given by the medication temporarily could gradually invite the patient to the correction of the cause in himself. But if the cause is as frequently it is hysteria, the hysteria itself cannot be medicated, only the symptoms. Therefore, if the person is the condition they're in because of a very basic dispositional or temperamental deficiency, this has to be considered in its own right. For example, there are a great many young people who in this day and age develop either superiority or inferiority complexes. The inferiority complex can sometimes be bolstered up, but the superiority complex is an extremely difficult thing to live with, not only for the person, but for all around them. The individual who really feels that they are destiny's darling and have been frustrated all the way along very often develop definite hysteria and actually become involved in what are now considered to be pathological symptoms. The person with an inflated ego who cannot accomplish their purpose will have the tendency to develop hysteria. Now, the reason for this is very simple. The will to be, the desire to be, the conviction that one can be is grouped at one end of a situation. At the other end of the situation is a personality that is incapable of fulfilling those pressures. The individual is, in their inner life, a magnificent example of superiority, but in daily living is more likely an example of inferiority. They are not apparently able to do anything important. And as they are not interested in doing anything that isn't important, the limitations of their own development, or as Lavater always called it, the problem of organic quality, in which the body and the brain and the nervous system were not suitable to the ambitions of the ego, where this condition exists, you have a condition in which hysteria can very often develop and does and becomes pathological. The individual simply cannot get well so long as they believe that health means the inalienable right to dominate other people, to do whatever they please themselves, to be completely superior, when in reality they simply haven't the capacity for it. This type of hysteria needs reorientation, but is very difficult to get. These people do not marry well. They do not become good parents. They often have abilities sufficient to make a good living if they use them. Much of the time, they will be out of employment because of these tension and stress periods that develop within themselves. If a person wants to have a fairly good life, it is much better for everyone to be moderate in their ambitions, very grateful for the abilities that they have, and try to enlarge and expand their usefulness without overdoing or developing psychoses of grandeur, of something that is not even possible to be fulfilled. Now, there are certain cases also in which the individual comes into a state through shock. Shock may be a very terrible physical shock, as a great and severe accident, or a psychic shock, as a case of infidelity in marriage, or a tragedy in the loss of a child, or the collapse of a business, or the sudden realization that the individual is afflicted with a serious and maybe fatal ailment. All of these things can produce shock, and shock has a tendency to short-circuit the magnetic field. The result of the shock is that the entire system goes out of whack. The individual, in their psychological, in their endocrine structure, and in their functional structure, has blown the fuse. And this can be a very serious and troublesome problem. Once, however, the shock begins to subside, nature steps in. In order to have a shock endure, the individual must support it beyond the pattern of the incident itself. We cannot suffer the same pain twice. We may have a new pain, but we cannot suffer the old one but once. We cannot go through a certain experience itself but once. There may be other experiences, but somewhere within ourselves we have to face up to the problem of these experiences that do arise. We can hope they will not come in our lives, but they may. Where this type of thing occurs, the individual, shocked, retires from humanity. They retire into themselves. This shock gradually becomes chronic. Now, when the individual blows the fuse and it is replaced in the near future, the circuit goes back into action. But if the circuit is left without being repaired over a long period of time, it may become incurably broken. Therefore, wherever there is a stress of great intensity, the problem of recovery becomes an immediate situation to face. The person must gradually rise above the problem that is confronting him. He must get away from the issue. Sometimes he will wait too long to try to do so. I know several cases in which persons under very heavy loss or under tragedy were advised, for instance, to go away for a while. They were told that if they would take a nice long vacation somewhere or take a trip to some interesting place, it would help them. Well, the advice is more or less traditional, but it does help in some cases. But much depends on how soon it is done. If an individual says, yes, I realize there's nothing more I can do here, the situation is set finished, I'll book the next plane to Europe or something of that nature and try to get away from it, try to rebuild something. If he does it this way, he has a fair chance of success. But if he says, I don't think I can do it now, and he waits for a year or two to get around to doing it, the probabilities of improvement are very small unless he is already improving from other causes. If a sudden condition creates a short circuit in our lives, it is better for it to be faced again by an immediate, sudden, constructive experience that will help to take up or compensate for the problem that is unhappy. Now, hysteria can also result in various complications of ailments. You can have, for instance, an hysterical stomach. Now, stomach hysteria is of two kinds. One is the chronic type that arises from the fact that the nervous system, in its symbolism, has fixed upon the digestion and the stomach as a particularly weak area in which it can release its intemperances. A person who is finicky in food, who develops all kinds of antagonisms towards foods, will develop sometimes hysteria if forced to eat foods that cause this attitude. One of the major, most common reasons for that is dieting, where a person, in order to accomplish a medical or medicinal diet or a cosmetic diet, is forced to live largely on food that they object to. This type of food usually will not digest well, and the result is irritation in the stomach and the possibility of ulceration. Of course, on the other hand, shock or stress will cause a sinking feeling in the solar plexus, which is related to the stomach and digestive system. And in some simple words, hysterical outbreaks injure digestion. And by so doing, they badly unbalance body chemistry. As a result of a bad dispositional outburst, the entire digestive, assimilative, and excretory systems are adversely affected. The more nervous, the more excitable, the more tense the person is, the more he's likely to have problems of elimination and digestion. Now, most people today complain of this type of problem, and a great number of persons are using various artificial means to improve elimination. The best way to improve it, actually, is to maintain a proper constructive attitude while eating. If an individual carries a grudge to the dinner table, he's going to regret it. The Chinese found that out a long time ago. They also found out that the meal wasn't improved if the cook had a grudge. While we are not sure that the purveyors of TV dinners have grudges, still, perhaps the indifference, the complete commercialization, the lack of thoughtfulness, the lack of individual involvement in the preparation of these prepared foods may have an effect upon their digestibility, regardless of the quality of the merchandise, which is incidentally likely not to be too good. But the person who is irritated, uncomfortable, and unhappy will have stomach trouble, will not be able to eat properly, will have erratic eating habits, and will have poor elimination, and will be worried to death about everything, their children, their world, and all about it. It all sets into a pattern. The individual who enjoys his food is far less likely to be an hysterical person simply because he finds relaxation and the digestive processes go on unimpaired. The moment we impair a function, we begin to defeat a disposition. The moment we defeat a disposition, we use the magnetic energy of our invisible electrical equipment unwisely. We begin to pervert energy. The perversion of energy can do all kinds of things. One problem we're having now is the problem of what happens in an accident where we are having atomic or neutronic research. We know that the nuclear waste is endangering the planet. Now, with our own little way of life, we have nuclear waste also inside of ourselves. Wherever we use natural forces unwisely, we are doing the same thing that humanity is doing when it is using universal energy to create an instrument of destruction. Destructive attitudes have their energy wastes in our bodies. These wastes end up and develop into toxins. And the more toxic we are, the more subject we will be to some type of hysteria. Where there is a good digestion and the individual sleeps well, hysteria is not so much of a problem. This brings sleep into focus. One of the most interesting problems of sleep is that it can be a defense mechanism and it can be an escape mechanism. The individual may retire into sleep to avoid the world. He may have retire into sleep to restore the body, which is its most natural and proper usage. He may also attempt to escape into a world of fantasy. Sleep may be a way of getting away from himself, forgetting his own existence. If he wants to forget his own existence, he likes to sleep a long time. If, on the other hand, he is too busily engaged in almost any activity that requires consciousness, he may become short-circuited in his sleeping mechanism and not get rest enough. The actual person who is suffering from hysteria is often a poor sleeper. He has problems of rest which have not been solved. He may go to sleep, but he will wake up tired and unrefreshed. He will find difficulty in getting back to sleep, and then the awful thing happens. The individual begins to think. And by the time he has thought his way through every impossible situation that might arise in his conscious life, by the time he has remembered every misery he ever went through and becomes ever fearful of the outcome of his present undertakings, he is really in a sad way. To meet this emergency, we have the famous aspirin remedies by the millions. And the sale of these indicates, beyond doubt, that a very large part of our population does not sleep well. And that does not mention the group that are under medical sleeping aids, but simply those who are trying to get away from the pressure of the day. Now, sleep has a good answer to many problems for us. Much concerning sleep and rest is involved in what happens an hour or two before you go to sleep. The last pint of the day, the hour or half hour before you hope to sleep, should be in some way an invitation to rest. It can be good music. It can be a good book read for a time. It can be good thoughts. It can be plans for better things to do tomorrow. It can be reminiscence over the joys of life, or a very devotional attitude of gratitude to the world, to God, and to our friends and family for the many benefits that we enjoy. All the things that go ahead of the sleeping period should be constructive. And everything that has to be held in abeyance because it isn't so happy should not be involved in sleep. A great many reports are coming in of the detrimental effect of television programming on sleep. The individual who just finishes a program with four or five murders in it and then tries to go to sleep is apt to find that his nervous system and his temperament in general is not able to handle the conditioning of the film. We try very often to condition people constructively in psychoanalysis. But when we are confronted by persons who spend 6 to 8 hours a day being adversely conditioned by entertainment, we have very little chance of catching up with the evil that is done by uncontrolled, unregulated entertainment. It is just one of those things. We carry into sleep the fantasies of the screen or the tube, and as a result, we have a bad case of insomnia. Now, other ways of helping insomnia, of course, is to realize that usually we sleep because we're tired. Your neurotic is tired all the time, but only mentally and emotionally. They do not have adequate physical exhaustion or fatigue. Therefore, physical activity, well-disciplined but adequate, is extremely useful in producing the pattern of sleep and wake which is proper to the individual. Consequently, a life in which there is a reasonable amount of physical activity is more or less necessary. Another problem that confronts a great many people is the ever-increasing problem of finance. How to meet and cope with the inflationary cycles that are disturbing us at the present time. Many persons are now being forced to restrict their activities. They're not able to spend the money they would spend normally. If a few seem to have more, there are many that have less. And this problem interferes with man's escape mechanisms. If he can go out and spend substantially every evening, or if he can travel widely, or if he can entertain elaborately, he has a certain sense of fulfillment. But if a person who has depended entirely upon what he has for his happiness finds that he is no longer able to indulge these appetites, then the self-pity factor comes in. The person who likes to extrovert, but because of financial restriction must sit home or must limit his activity as a spender, develops self-pity and also may be more apt to have emotional outbursts. He is not able to be what he thinks he should be. He is not getting the diversions that he thinks are proper. Now, the problem of how to handle all these things in life and to get what you can out of it comes back to the essential principle of what are we here for? What are we trying to do? Why do we live in this world? Are we living here to cuddle our faults or get over them? Are we here to nurse our weaknesses or try to correct them? Are we here to be big-time spenders or are we here to be big-time learners? What is the purpose for life? Nearly all hysteria arises from false evaluation of purpose. The individual who has no vision of purpose and lives entirely on the pressures of the moment, of course, is in a very weak situation. If these pressures become excessive, he's in serious trouble. But our real problem here is not to nurse our weaknesses. It is not to be always remembering the disasters of the past. It isn't even a problem of trying to understand the present administration, which is causing considerable activity. For a great many people, before this administration gets too much further one way or the other, they will depart from this world anyway, leaving the administration behind. And in the course of time, we will leave every administration behind. History is a proof that we are leaving the past behind every moment. Therefore, while it is proper for us to study processes, look for weaknesses, and contemplate corrections, these attitudes must be those of a scholar, a student, a young person in school. We are in this world to learn. And it is the learning that counts. And when the learning goes sour in ourselves, then we are all ready for hysteria. It is the individual who cannot take the lesson, who feels that it is their duty to suffer, when it's not their duty to suffer, unless they wish to reject the multiplication table and the alphabet. We are here to solve the problem of our own existence. And in the solving of it, to solve the problem of universal existence. They're all tied together. We're down here in this particular environment because we need it, because we've earned it, and because we have to live out in it many processes and patterns which we established long ago. If we were born into this world as a neurotic, and a lot of people are, or if we have congenital hysteria, it means we have brought with us a load of unfinished business. It means that we were a failure before, or at least we're not completely successful. And if we do exactly what we did before, we will stay in hysteria throughout the present life. If, however, we are tired of what we came with and decide that it's better to do something about it, we are not only getting ourselves out of the present emergency, but we are curing the larger pattern which we brought with us. There's nothing that we can do in this world that is as valuable as the proper use of the equipment with which we have been endowed. we all have a whole group of values. We have a mind which is capable of being worn out, tired, miserable, sick, and disillusioned, or a great idealistic opportunity for beauty, for wisdom, for knowledge, for the searching out of values. We have emotions that can make us hysterical, can make us hate everything that we do and everyone that we know. And we also have emotions that have created great music, great art, great literature, and a world of splendid creativity. We have a body which is more or less a tired, worn-out thing by the time we get here. It would seem as though we carry a body that carries in it all the karma of a delinquent world, that we are part of a descent of bodies that have been more or less deformed and defaced by generations of heredity. We do not come here, you know, into a beautiful, perfect body. We come into a body that we've got to take hold of. If we leave it as a fragment of a great descent of biology, we have to live with that. But if we find this body needs a little work, and we get to work and do it, we gradually transform this body into a magnificent instrument of enlightened purpose. It becomes our link with our world, our link with humanity, our link with our neighbor and ourselves. Through the body, we see our own inner life reflected out into the environment in which we live. Now, hysteria and hysterical outbreaks all result from mistakes in the handling of these situations. They result in the individual not learning, even from repeated experience. They result from an individual not recognizing his needs and his weaknesses. They show a lack of dedication, and they show a lack of unselfish affection and friendship. They're all forms of selfishness of some kind. They're all self-centeredness. They are all regrets over the mistakes rather than plans for the correction of them. Gradually, the individual, wearing down from the pressure of years, gets tired. And when he gets tired, he either weakens or relaxes. Now, if in being tired, he loses his faith in humanity, he is in trouble. But if he is tired and relaxes, and finds that in the peaceful quietude of relaxation that he can experience for the first time his relationship to the great principles of life, then he is a wiser person. It is the privilege of everyone to be made wise by age, to learn more, perhaps not all, but enough to be better when we leave than when we came. But if we settle down and refuse this, if we become so sorry for ourselves that we either can no longer grow or even go to the point where we wish we were out of here, with this type of situation, we have mistaken the reason for existence. And under a mistake of this kind, we have a tendency to develop hysterical symptoms. They are simply the symptoms of the uncorrected infirmities of our own natures. They are the misuse of energy. It takes just as much or more energy to worry and to grouch as it does to grow. And by the use of it for a grouch, we get another grouch. By using it to grow, we improve. And each individual has the right to try to decide for himself how he's going to use his life allotment, whether he is going to allow this flow of life from the sun and from the heavens to go through him and come through him into the fulfillment of a more glorious career. If he thinks this way, he can make it. If he thinks of this energy, however, merely as something that has been given to him so that he can suffer more, he will not find very much to reward his attitudes. So in all problems, the individual who is self-centered, selfish, and remains willfully ignorant of the beauties of life, this individual is a good candidate for either hysterical outbreaks or a chronic neurotic hysteria within his own nature. We are quite sure, of course, that all of you have all outgrown this problem, but you can use it to help your friends anyway. Thank you very much.